Next case on our calendar is 07 Kenneth C. Hageman versus Southwest General Health Center. Mr. Kronenberg.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, thank you for allowing me the privilege of being here today on behalf of Barbara Belovich. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal in this matter, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, the issue before the court is whether an attorney can be held liable for the unauthorized disclosure of healthcare information for having given healthcare records, which were lawfully obtained and which were not subject to a protective order, to a prosecuting attorney at the prosecuting attorney's request. That is an issue that is fraught with a number of terms, all of which are important. And that issue arises from this court's pronouncement in the case of Biddle versus Warren General Hospital. In that particular case, the court limited its remedy to creating a common law tort in a circumstance where one of two things happened. Either a medical provider engaged in the unauthorized disclosure of medical records to some third party, or that third party induced the medical provider to do that. In this case, for the reasons that are reflected in the record from the court below, neither happened. And in fact, the Court of Appeals in this case created a third class of people, specifically in this instance, my client, Ms. Belovich, who was held liable, or potentially could be held liable, since this case went to the Court of Appeals on summary judgment, for having taken records which the Court of Appeals expressly found were not an unauthorized disclosure. The Court of Appeals affirmed the grant of summary judgment to the psychiatrist whose records they were. The Court of Appeal affirmed the grant of summary judgment to the hospital for whom the psychiatrist worked. The Court of Appeal did not make any finding, nor did the trial court, that Ms. Belovich had induced a disclosure of unauthorized records because they were authorized.
Well, counsel, psychiatrist didn't give them to the prosecutor, did he?
No, the prosecutor did not get them from the psychiatrist, Your Honor.
And the hospital didn't give them to the prosecutor.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And your theory of why your client shouldn't still be in the case is that it's all statutory, and if she doesn't come within the reaches of the statute, she could post these on the public square.
Theoretically, yes, Your Honor. I do not think that would be the best course of action, but I think that once the records were public record, that anyone's free to do with them as they please, particularly in the ambit of a court proceeding, which has a high public policy of allowing full disclosure of matters that are relevant
to
the
court. They were released to her for a specific purpose, were they not?
They were released to her for the specific purpose of a domestic relations action that comprehended two things.
And you don't think there should be any common law expectation of privacy with respect to these records, given the statute carefully controls who can get these without consent of the person whose records they are?
With respect, Your Honor, I do not believe so, because I think that once that they become unprivileged, that expectation of privacy has disappeared.
And you say that they were unprivileged because there was no language to the contrary restricting. In other words, the release was unequivocal and universal, in your opinion?
Your Honor, it was for a number of reasons. There were a number of reasons that appear in the record. The first reason was because they were records that were sought in connection with a custody proceeding. And because it was within a custody proceeding, the mental health status of the parties at issue was at issue. The second reason was because, as the record below reflects, the wife, my client, who happens to be my spouse, so that gives me some difficulties here, my client also had reason to believe, and the record reflects, that that spouse was present when these records were created, so that made the privacy expectation of Mr. Hageman disappear. And it is hard to untangle the fact that the incident that gave rise to the custody proceeding in domestic relations court also gave rise to a criminal proceeding.
But that's just it. This was a separate criminal proceeding, separate and apart from what was taking place in domestic relations court.
Well, actually, there were three proceedings, two of which were combined, two in domestic.
The civil protection order and the custody are domestic relation.
Yes, ma'am.
The assault is in the general division.
Correct.
And these were released for use within the general division as opposed to confined to the domestic relations cases.
They were simply shared to everyone that day, and the prosecutor happened to be there. He was interested. Everybody got a copy.
What do you mean they were shared with everybody?
They were shared with, to my knowledge, they were shared with the husband's counsel. They were made available to everyone. There, quite literally, there's a copying machine right outside the hearing room where this hearing would have taken place had it gone forward. And to my knowledge, copies were made and distributed to everyone. And in fact, the subpoena that gave rise to these records release was on the docket 5 days before the hearing. So Mr. Hageman knew that at least these records were being sought.
Counsel, if we were to accept your position, would that pretty much compel any time records like this are sought and released by a medical provider? It would put an obligation on the attorney on the other side to seek a protective order or a order restricting their dissemination or use?
I'm not sure it would absolutely require that, Your Honor, but certainly that was an available remedy that was not exercised in this case and was, I think, effectively waived for that reason.
Well, who went to the copy machine?
To my knowledge, my client.
Counsel, absent the domestic relations matter and the release of records for the domestic relations matter, would the prosecutor have been able to obtain these records in the criminal proceeding under his own, under discovery or some other proper process?
Frankly, Your Honor, I don't know. I've made 3 criminal appearances in 32 years, and I've not addressed that issue at all.
Would that make a difference?
I don't think it would, Your Honor, because that's not what happened here. Maybe if the prosecutor were seeking those independently, that would be a relevant concern for this court within that ambit of facts. But in these facts, the records were released properly by the psychiatrist and were then available, I would suggest, for any use.
All right, and these,
is there any
these
limit?
Were not introduced.
Go ahead.
These were not introduced in evidence. They were available to be introduced in evidence, but they were not in fact introduced. Do I understand that correctly from the fact?
There was never a formal hearing on this domestic violence charge. It was resolved by a consent protection order.
Is there anything in the record that indicates this waiver was limited in any regard?
Nothing that I've been able to see, Your Honor.
So it was offered with the avowed intent that it would go to domestic relations, but there was no judicial language or no language that's contained in the record that limits the waiver of that privilege in any respect.
Nothing that I see, Your Honor. I mean, it was released for that purpose, and therefore, once it's released, I'm not sure that you can have a sort of a springing privilege. So, at least I would argue not.
So if an individual waives privilege, it's waived.
Well, it was not even a, I think it's, yes, Your Honor, but if you'll allow me to expand, it's not even a question of Mr. Hageman having waived privilege. It's more a question that by bringing the counterclaim that he did for custody, and I'm not sure that that's entirely dispositive of whether he had waived privilege, because the statute, the custody statute, 3109.04, speaks to either party's mental health when making a custody determination. But by not asserting any privilege, I think that he then de facto waived it for all purposes.
So, yeah, I'm interested or mystified by this assertion of waiver. He didn't waive anything, did he? You're saying by operation of law, there was a waiver.
Well, there was the Gill case, which made the waiver as part of the custody claim. There was also the presence of his spouse in the therapy sessions, which I think.
But he didn't actively do anything, nor did the person who created these records. That person just responded to a subpoena from your client. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. As to the person who responded, that's correct. I believe that, however, that the man who has the privacy expectation, the plaintiff here, had an obligation to do something more than sit back and say, well, if this happens, it happens, then I'll complain about it later.
Why wouldn't the law assume that someone's medical records are to be limited in their public exposure? I mean, here you're making it was a civil action, and now they wind up, these medical records wind up in a criminal action. Different parties, different forum, different cause of action, or different legal action. Why, I mean, I don't. I guess I'm a little confounded about your statement that, well, a person ought to say that I want my records to be private. I mean, why don't we assume that? I mean, most of the assumption is, I think, that medical records are private matter, and here they were given, subpoenaed, given for a certain purpose in a domestic case. I guess I don't understand why the patient here, or the person whose records they are, has to proclaim that these are private. They're here only for this purpose. I would think we would assume that.
Well, Your Honor, with all respect, I think that it's not entirely appropriate to talk. Yes, they are two different cases. They are two different forms. But the facts that gave rise to the domestic violence proceeding in the domestic relations court that was seeking the protection of this woman and her child by virtue of this serious injury were the same facts that gave rise to the prosecutor's choice to charge him criminally. The record here is silent as to whether those medical records were actually introduced in the criminal case. To my knowledge, they were not. They were excluded.
Well, counsel, they were not introduced into the domestic relations case either, correct?
That's because, yes, Your Honor, there was no formal hearing. There was a consent
order. There was a consent. All right. Had they been introduced to the domestic relations court, would they have been inserted into the domestic relations file openly, or would there have been, as I've seen in many cases where there's been medical records or psychiatric records, put into a sealed envelope of a different color, put inside the file, and it says in bold letters that, you know, if medical records are sealed or whatever the designation, and the clerks know that if someone comes to ask for that file, they remove the confidential information and then give the file to whomever seeks to take a look at it. Is that the practice?
Your Honor, there is no standard practice, and I agree with you that that is something that I have seen happen.
Is that something that the court does in the domestic relations arena in Cuyahoga County?
Yes, ma'am, but no one ever asked that it be done.
Why would they? The parties have to ask for that, or the court, as a standard practice, has that occur?
I can't say that my experience is exhaustive, but I've never seen it done on the court's own request. It has always been at the request of a party.
Mm-hmm. Well, counsel, you said nobody asked for it. It's not even in the file in this case, right?
That's correct.
So there's nothing to ask for in terms of sealing, except that your client, with some confidential information she received under a subpoena, went over to the copy machine and ripped off some copies, and your description is she passed it out to anybody that asked.
Yes, Your Honor, because I think that it was at that point no longer confidential. Now, in point of fact, as this court I think probably knows from the paucity of cases it sees in the domestic relation area, the vast majority of those cases are settled. There are very few trials. My estimate to my own clients is maybe 2% of the cases get tried. In fact, a Court of Appeals judge with whom I had a discussion some years ago when he was running for a seat on this court said he believed it was this court's determination that it should defer to the discretion of the trial courts in domestic relations cases to deal with those issues because of the fact-intensive basis of it. And so I think that the fact that there was no trial is not dispositive because there are so very few trials in matters of this kind. Well,
no, but it as Justice O'Connor pointed out, it didn't become a public record because there was no trial. And so you're saying your client subpoenaed it, got it into her file, and that waives it for the rest of the world even though it's not even in a court file.
Well, when everyone is aware of it, particularly when the party who's aggrieved is aware of it, when he sees a subpoena on the docket, I think he has an obligation to seek the quashing of that subpoena and the sealing of those records if he is going to be so aggrieved. Your Honor, I see I'm into my rebuttal time, so.
But wouldn't that be a futile act if one believed there are legitimate matters in that report for discussion in the kind of case it was about to unfold and didn't? What would be your basis for quashing that if your lawyer says, well, you know, it's fair game if we have a hearing on this?
Then I think that he's effectively waived it by making that choice. And so it wouldn't be a futile act. It's a recognition that it's relevant material.
Well, instead of filing a motion to quash, you could still file a motion to seal the documents that are produced under subpoena.
Yes, Your Honor. That would have been yet another remedy that was not pursued by the plaintiff in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kronenberg. Mr. Bullis.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is James Bullis, and I represent the appellee Kenneth Hageman in this matter. And I urge the court to affirm the ruling of the lower court. principle that I believe applies here is that the disclosure and use of medical records pursuant to an implicit waiver should be limited to the use for which that waiver was implemented. In other words, in this case, there was an implied waiver for the purposes of child custody. The use of those records should be limited for the purpose of determining child custody.
Would that be a new rule if we were to establish that? That's not written anywhere in the statute or case law, is it?
Well, Justice Stratton, I think I have not seen anything. It's a matter of public policy. First, I think that it's important that we point out to, and I think we all know that these are mental health records, probably the most sensitive type. I'm sure that the court would agree with me. And the public has a strong interest in seeing that those that have mental health problems seek the help that they need to get well. In this case, there's certain assertions that are not quite accurate. The records were received by Barbara Belovich on October 13th via facsimile. 2 days later, as Mr. Cronenberg said, she was at the copier making copies for anybody that was there. This bothers me. This is the first that I've heard this, and it really does bother me that that somebody could be so cavalier and say, well, I have these sensitive mental health records, and I'm going to be standing by the copier and handing out copies. I mean,
now that's not quite what he said. He said the prosecutor asked, and she went over and made apparently more than one copy and maybe gave them to somebody else, too. But he didn't quite make it quite as expansive as you've just made it.
Justice Pfeiffer, I think that I didn't see anything in the record where the prosecutor requested the records. And the fact that the prosecutor was present for a civil domestic violence hearing, I tend to believe that somebody invited him. And I think, as you pointed out,
well, we don't know that, do we?
No. But again,
prosecutors are wandering around courtrooms all day long, I assume, in Cuyahoga County and everywhere else, and sometimes they happen upon other things that are of interest to them.
Justice Pfeiffer, we're talking about two separate buildings and two separate sides of the street, but anything is possible in Cuyahoga County, I will give you that. But I think that, as you mentioned earlier, the prosecutor's not entitled to these records otherwise. The state certainly cannot subpoena these records for use in criminal.
I didn't mention that, and I don't know.
It was an issue that you asked, and I.
No, I didn't.
I did ask that question, and I have another one to go along with.
I'm sorry.
ask your question, Mr. Cupp, quickly.
If we might.
Get the issue.
This case is being argued under the testimonial privilege. Is there a broader confidentiality statute for medical records and mental health records that's at issue here, or is it only the waiver of the testimonial privilege that's at issue here?
No. I think that the policy, there's a concept, there's a policy that these records are privileged, and that this privilege applies. There may be a waiver, there may be a limited waiver for
certain purposes. That's the privilege argument. Is there a general confidentiality issue here as opposed to the testimonial privilege? Is there a statute that makes these records confidential? Is there a common law principle that says these records are confidential?
Well, Biddle set forth the records being confidential and that they are learned in the doctor-patient relationship and they are non-public, which is what these records were. They were non-public medical records. So they are confidential under Biddle and under other common law principles, and I believe by statute as well. But the issue here seems to be that once there's a waiver for a certain purpose, does that then become a global waiver where I believe it was said, can we post these on the town square? I don't think so. I think that we use these records for the purposes for which they are intended. If they are intended for determining custody, let's use them to determine custody. And ironically, in this case, they were never used to determine custody. They were never even offered to the court. And there's a lot of talk about filing a motion for a protective order. How do you file a motion for a protective order when the evidence is never offered to the court? Somehow, Mr. Cronenberg would have the plaintiff be proactive in protecting his records while the law already protects them. Once there's an offer made to the court, then a motion for a protective order can be filed. A motion to keep the records under seal could be filed. But certainly prior to that, the plaintiff can't come in and ask the court to do something. He has no standing at that point.
So, Counselor, you're saying because the records were not part of the court record, that there was no order for the court to issue to keep those records under seal.
Justice O'Connor, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm sorry.
Well, follow-up to that is the use that was made of these records. When do they become public record, I guess, is my question here. Are they public record when they're released to the pursuant to the subpoena and put in the hands of the opposing party's counsel? Or do they become public records when they're used in a public or a legal forum, such as a hearing or a trial, or introduced into evidence? I'm not so sure that they're public records just because they were released pursuant to a statute that says you've got to release them for this purpose. So that's my concern here.
Yes, Your Honor. These were never public record. And if they had been introduced into evidence and offered to the court, then a motion could have been filed to put them under seal, which is what is customarily done, and they're never public record. And mental health records like this should never be public record. But in this case, all that was preempted because, and if I can backtrack for a second, these records were obtained without a written release. So Mr. Hageman had no idea that Ms. Belovich was trying to get his medical records. Sure, she asked for a release, he never signed it, presuming that without a release she couldn't get the records. There was a motion to compel filed with the court. Court never ruled on that issue. So this was almost a kind of a side door where the subpoena was issued, the doctor faxed the records to Ms. Belovich, and then she ran off copies and provided the prosecutor. And
counsel, in countless personal injury cases, records are always subpoenaed, if not given voluntarily. And countless protective orders were filed, asking in the discovery process that those records be under protection, be under protective order. You have to see that with trade secrets. It doesn't require the trial before it becomes public. There's always motions to keep records under seal at the discovery phase. But it sounds like what you're asking for is a blanket ruling from this court that every medical record, and I understand mental health may be more significant, but the statute doesn't distinguish mental health from medical, physical medical. It just says medical records. And it sounds like the rule you're seeking is an automatic finding that they are not disclosable. So that has some pretty broad ramifications. Can you give them to your expert? Can you give them to your client? Can you give them to the accident reconstruction? You know, all those ramifications, because the rule you're asking for is broader than just a domestic relations case. It's a medical records ruling that you seem to be seeking from us. How do we deal with all those broad ramifications of finding that any medical records that are subpoenaed for any purpose are only for that limited purpose, and how far does that go? It's a pretty broad rule that you're asking. Can you help clarify it?
Justice Stratton, actually, this is right in line with the proposal that I made, that the disclosure be limited to that use. When you're a personal injury attorney or a defense attorney and you get an IME or you get medical records from the plaintiff, you give them to your expert, but you give them to your expert for the purposes of that trial, for that purpose. You use them for that purpose. Now, if that personal injury attorney were to take those records and go to his neighbor's house for a cookout and say, boy, look at this, I mean, that's just improper. These records are privileged, they should remain privileged, and the only use that they should be allowed is for the purpose for which there's a waiver, and especially when it's the law that creates a waiver. It's an involuntary waiver. In this case, Mr. Hageman, while yes, voluntarily filed a counterclaim and put his mental health at issue, the law operated in a manner in which he lost his privilege. And when that happens, we can't say, boy, it's a global release and you can post these on the town square. These should be limited for use. These were sensitive, embarrassing records. I mean, what incentive do we give somebody with a mental health problem to go out and seek help, knowing that these records could eventually be posted on the town square because you went through a divorce?
Is that a decision we should make, or is that a decision that the legislature should make?
I'm sorry?
Is that a decision we as a court can make, or is that a policy decision for the legislature on open records?
No, it's a decision that the court can make, because this court can hold that these records, that the use of these records must be limited. And this is a very clear-cut case. There's absolutely no relationship. And I challenge Mr. Kronenberg to explain to this court's satisfaction how giving these records to the prosecutor advanced the divorce action.
And there was no request to the domestic relations court to limit the use of these records, to seal the records, or for any protective order with respect to the use of them, was there?
Not at all, Justice Van Allen. The reason for
so
that.
So if your client knew and authorized the release of those records, received a copy of the subpoena requesting them, failed to object, knew that they were coming in, knew all the parties in the domestic relations court had them, why wouldn't you say your client waived his privilege with respect to those records?
Justice O'Donnell, there are two issues here. First, the subpoena was never served. You'll notice.
How did
no
the physician release those records? I thought the physician was subpoenaed to come to court with the records, then had a conflict in schedule, and then forwarded those records.
The physician did receive the subpoena. It's Mr. Hageman who'd never received the subpoena. Mr. Hageman became aware of these records, that these records were released on the day that they were given to the prosecutor. So there was never an opportunity. Again, had these records been offered into evidence, then Mr. Hageman could have objected, or at the very least asked for, if not a protective order, that the records be kept under seal, which I believe the court would have granted a motion to put these records under seal. And under those circumstances, there is no way the prosecutor would have gotten them.
Mr. Bolus, I've been trying to get to the Biddle case, which seems to support what you're saying, because there we were talking about the consent received from the individual whose records there are, and there was a statement that the consent to release the medical information must be fairly specific in terms of to whom the release is made. I mean, we positively said you may have a or your release should be specific, and if it's going to be limited, it ought to state that. Are you not then arguing the same in a situation where there's a subpoena? In a subpoena for a particular case implies that the records would be used solely for that case.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That's absolutely what I'm urging this court to do. And I think that it's
counsel, mechanical question here. My recollection is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if you issue, as a lawyer representing a client, if you issue a subpoena or a subpoena ducis tecum, you do that. You file it with the court, and you provide various methods of service. You can serve it yourself. You can have the sheriff serve it, whatever. But I don't think there didn't used to be any requirement that you give a copy of it to the other side, to the lawyer on the other side.
That's correct. And okay.
So the way the lawyer on the other side discovers it is by looking in the file if they think to do that. It's there to be discovered, but there's no notice to the opposing side, either the party or the attorney, that it's been issued.
That's correct. In an ideal world, we check the docket every day, and if we see a subpoena's been filed, we drive downtown but it's not an ideal world, and for the most part, I think that attorneys do a pretty good job about serving each other with subpoenas. This goes beyond that, because in this case—
But they're not required to.
They are not required to.
And Mr. Bulis, the Court of Appeals noted in its opinion that on July 21st of 03, you entered your appearance. You determined that a positive prognosis from Dr. Thisrell was essential to your client's case. You and your client met with the physician, and during the meeting requested that the doctor author the report with the appellant's prognosis as good as long as he continued treatment and follow-up, and that was submitted to the court on July 29th. Isn't that how this all started? You started this.
That's almost correct. I was.
Well, the Court of Appeals has it wrong. Is that?
Well, you'll notice, Your Honor, that there's no there's nothing on the record that I was present at the meeting. I was not, but the prognosis was requested for the purposes of custody, for the purposes of the domestic relations action, never for the purposes of.
So, your client asked the doctor to submit the information to the court.
Yes, we agree. There was a waiver. Absolutely, there was a waiver for the purposes of determining.
So child your custody. Client did waive it.
My client waived the privilege for the purpose of determining child custody. He did not waive the privilege as to the
and
entire
And where, world. Anywhere, court order or document or letter, could we find that in the record, that limited waiver?
I believe that that limited waiver applies by operation of law.
Okay. We should imply it from the circumstances of this case.
Well, as Justice Lasinger pointed out, there's Biddle, which says that it should specifically identify the person to whom these records are being released. In this case, these records were never released to the Cuyahoga County prosecutor.
Okay. Thank you.
I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bolus. Mr. Kronenberg, you've saved a little less than a minute of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I thank the court for its questions, and I think that it is key to remember that these records were not posted on the public square. These records were not traded at a barbecue. They were part of a court proceeding where the public policy was to protect a victim of a severe act of domestic violence.
Mr. Kronenberg, weren't the records subpoenaed in another case? And are you saying that it's still within the scope of that custody case that the records were then used in a different proceeding?
Well, Your Honor,
potentially used in a different proceeding.
Potentially, yes. They were shared with the prosecutor who was in the different proceeding that was arising out of the same act that was the request that gave rise to the request of the civil protection order that had within it terms of denial of visitation to Mr. Hageman. So therefore, it was all of a piece, all the same act, all the same protection. And as a question from the court pointed out, there were all those remedies that are available in every pretrial proceeding and discovery that were available to Mr. Hageman to try and seek some sanction or some limitation. He did not. We would ask that the court reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the summary judgment.
Counsel, do you think it's unreasonable for someone whose medical records are released for a specific hearing or case to have an expectation that those records will only be used for that particular case? Is that an unreasonable premise from which to start when there is an overriding classification of medical records as being confidential and with all the attendant restrictions on their use and their release?
Your Honor, I do not think that is unreasonable, but I don't think that was what exactly was happening here because of the interconnection between all of the same factors of the same incident.
So you're saying that Mr. Hageman should have anticipated that his medical or psychiatric records were going to be released to the prosecutor because he allegedly committed an act for which he could be prosecuted?
Not could be, Your Honor, was being prosecuted. His criminal counsel entered an appearance in this domestic relation action. He was fully aware of what was going on. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Kronenberg. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.